ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयति गिरिं यत्कृपातं अहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरं नमो विष्णुपदाय विष्णुपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे नमो महाविदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्या नाम्ने गौरक्षे नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So we'll discuss from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5. Last time we discussed up to text 9. So we'll continue from text 10 onwards. So I will read next few verses and then we'll have the discussion from that. So text 10. Brahmanayadhaya karmani sangam tyaktva karotiya lipyate na sapapena padam patram ivangasa. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the result unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful action, as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. Kayena manasa buddhaya kevale rindriye rapi yoginah karma karvanti sangam tyaktvatma shuddhaye. The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. Yuktah karam palam tyatva shantim apnoti naishtikam ayukta kamakarena phale sakto nibhadhyate. The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the result of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. So we'll discuss these three verses, because the theme of these three verses is same. And as we discuss the overview of this chapter 5, the discussion which is going on between Lord Krishna and Arjuna. So Lord Krishna is describing Karma Sannyasa Yoga. So the discussion started again as per the question of Arjuna. Arjuna inquired, among the two, renouncing the work itself or working in devotion. So out of these two, what is better? And Lord Krishna started answering that both lead to the same result, but ultimately working with devotion is better than renouncing the work itself. So Lord Krishna has been stressing continuously that it's not that one has to give up his occupation, give up his duties, give up his social obligation, family life and everything, and go to the secluded place, go to forest or the Himalayas and practice spiritual life. One can practice spirituality while living in this world. The only thing one needs to give up is the desire to enjoy the result of his work. The desire for enjoyment, the mentality of proprietorship. That is what needs to be given up. So renouncing the result of one's action. So here, in text 10, Lord Krishna is describing that one who performs his duty without attachment. So first characteristic, to live in this world, the way Lord Krishna is describing is, one need to give up attachment. So earlier, one may be attached to his work, one may be attached to the result of his work. So earlier, one is engaged in karma, doing some work and getting the result. And the result is with the desire to enjoy. So it becomes sakama karma. So Lord Krishna is bringing, slowly, bringing to the higher level. So from sakama karma, come to the level of nishkam. Give up the attachment to the result of your action. But at that level, still one does not know where the result is going. So Lord Krishna says, surrender the result unto the Supreme Lord. So when one is not attached to one's result and surrenders the result to the Supreme Lord, then it comes to the level of Karma Yoga. In that way, one is unaffected by sinful reaction. And Lord Krishna is giving the analogy as the lotus leaf is untouched by the water. So first of all, what is so significant about lotus leaf? Why there is comparison with the lotus leaf? Many places this lotus leaf comes in description in the scriptures. Sometimes lotus leaf is used at many places to compare the beauty of Krishna. Lord Krishna's feet are described as Charana Kamal, lotus-like feet. His eyes are described as Kamalakshena, lotus-like eyes. His hands are described as Kar Kamal, lotus-like hands. So the various limbs of Krishna's body are compared with the beauty of lotus, because lotus is very beautiful. In this world, the most beautiful object one can be, which can be described as lotus. Why lotus is so beautiful? What is so special about lotus? Because another word which is used to describe lotus is pankaj, which means born from mud. Lotus flower grows from the mud found at the bottom of the lake, and yet still it rises above the water and blossoms towards the sun. So thus lotus flower is something which is born in the dirt but rises above it while retaining its beautiful purity. And the description of lotus is it has large leaves which float on the top of water surface. And the beauty of lotus leaf is that although it grows from the lake, from the mud, the leaf does not permit itself to be wetted by the water. So water poured on the lotus leaf, it just runs off the side. So in one sense, lotus leaves are the best natural biodegradable material. In a lot of Indian villages, lotus leaves are still used as plates for putting the food and kind of as eating plates, because they are waterproof. There is no water stays on the lotus. Whatever water is poured onto it, it does not soak through but runs off. So lotus is used so many places in scriptures just because of its special characteristic and its special beauty. And here Lord Krishna is saying, as the lotus remains untouched by the water, So same way, if person adopts these qualities while living in this world, he can be free from sinful reaction. Even though he is engaging in all the work in this world, he is doing all his duties, occupational duties, social duties, but if he stays without attachment and surrenders the results to the Supreme Lord, no sinful reaction can touch him. So those who dedicate their action to Krishna, abandoning all the attachment, remain untouched by sin. So another phrase which is used to reflect the same scenario, it says, be in the world but don't be of the world. So one should live in the world but don't become of the world. But how we can develop that quality of not being attached to anything? We are attached to our family, we are attached to our work, we get attached to practically everything in this world. So the various scenarios in our life, one need to develop this habit of not being attached to anything, like no attachment with family, no attachment with wife or son or children. So one externally should be acting to fulfill their needs, their desires, as if very much attached to them, as if he has a lot of attachment with them, a lot of mamta in the heart, but internally being detached. Now it may be very difficult from externally sounding, it may be very difficult that, oh, how we can be internally detached and externally show as if we are very much attached. Actually, Lord Krishna practically showed from his behavior how to live in this world without being affected by the externals and internally keeping his natural consciousness, natural position, original position. So once Lord Krishna was in Indraprastha, living with Pandavas, and at that time, Satyabhama's father, Satrajit, got killed. He died, basically he was killed. So she came to Krishna at that time. She came to Indraprastha at that time and she was crying that my father is dead. And as she came there, telling Krishna that my father has died, and seeing her situation and hearing that news that Satyabhama's father has died, Lord Krishna started crying. And now one can imagine why Lord Krishna will be crying. Because Lord Krishna himself is teaching in Bhagavad Gita, we are not this body, we are the soul, and there is no death for the soul. And if somebody has died, why Krishna is crying himself? But Lord Krishna started crying and he is raising his hands and crying like anything. He says, Aho paramam kashtam, such a big calamity has fallen upon us. My father-in-law, how will we live without you? You were so good. So Krishna is the Supreme Lord, but he is giving lesson by his behavior how to deal. So if he started giving at that time Gita Updesh to Satyabhama, it may not please Satyabhama. She will think, oh, my father has died and Krishna is speaking philosophy. He is telling me Atma Gyan and this, that. And if Krishna told at that time, okay, don't worry, I will find who are the culprit behind this and I will punish them. And Satyabhama thinks, yes, he is the king and he will punish the culprits. But without even doing any of these things, Krishna started crying. He is crying that, oh, father-in-law, you have lost, you have gone, and how will live without you? So seeing Krishna crying, Satyabhama got pacified. And she started pacifying Krishna in self, actually. Oh, she started thinking, oh, Krishna loves my father so much. And so she started telling, please don't cry. So Lord Krishna, externally, he is doing to please Satyabhama. So externally he is acting whatever will please the people, whatever will make the people around us happy and pleased. But internally retaining our original consciousness, not being attached to anything at all. So one need to cultivate those attributes, being in the world but don't become of the world, abandoning all attachment. So one need to have vairagya inside, but outside show as if we are very attached. There is so much mamta in the heart. And it is the renunciation of possessive mentality which is required, not the renunciation of the possession. So otherwise, if somebody is living in the palace and one gives up the opulences of the palace and goes to the forest. He has renounced his palace and all the facilities, all the opulences. But if he goes to the forest and make a hermitage there, now he develop attachment with that hermitage. Oh, this is my hermitage. I have planted all these plants around the hermitage, nice flowers and everything. The lake in front of the hermitage, it belongs to me. I take bath there in this lake. So in that situation also, he developed that possessiveness with that hermitage. So it's not that one need to renounce the possessions. One need to renounce the possessive attitude, the mentality of possessiveness. Develop the mentality of Rajarishi. So there were so many kings who, living in the palace while engaging in their kingly duties, they were renounced in their heart. Inside the heart, they had complete vairagya. So developing the mentality of a Rajarishi, living in the palace but not being attached to it. And same way, one need to be developing detachment from one's work, the result of one's work. Not getting attached, oh, if I don't do this work, how this work will get completed? One should think, I am just the instrument. And Lord Krishna has given me this facility to engage in this work. So let me do it for the pleasure of Krishna. It's not that without me, this work will not finish. Or without me, nobody can complete this work. So not developing the attachment with the result of the work, also attachment with the particular work itself. And finally, no attachment in one's spiritual circle, in spiritual practices also. Sometimes, especially devotees who are in the role of cultivating other devotees. So sometimes we get into this attitude that, oh, I am cultivating so many devotees. I am cultivating this Prabhuji or this Mataji, and they admire me so much. So that also gives one sort of attachment. One should always be detached from those kind of mentality also. Today somebody may be liking, admiring some particular devotee, hearing his lecture, hearing his kirtan. But tomorrow that same devotee may like somebody else better. So then it will bring some sort of ego or some sort of envy in that devotee's heart. That, oh, this devotee now doesn't care for me and it's caring other devotee or admiring other devotee. So one should not cultivate this attachment in any situation or any sort of phases in life, either it's a spiritual practice or family or work. So in every situation, one should cultivate this detachment and doing everything as a matter of duty. One should always perfectly know that everything belongs to Krishna. He is the proprietor of everything and everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. So naturally that person has nothing to do with the result of his activity, whether it's virtuous or sinful, if everything is done for satisfaction of Krishna. But if somebody thinks himself as the doer and then it get attached. So once there was a gardener, so he was in the kingdom, he was given a big responsibility to maintain all these gardens nicely. So he was very skilled in managing the garden, trimming the bushes and all that, making a nice landscape. And the people from far, far away will come visit those gardens to see the beauty of those gardens maintained by this person. And so this gardener became very proud in the heart. See, I am such a great skilled person, I create such a beautiful landscape and people from far, far away come to see my work. And one day, as he was doing his work, he saw one cow entered in the garden and she was munching on some flowers. And this gardener became very angry. Oh, she is spoiling my plants, she is spoiling my garden. So she went and started hitting the cow. And she was so, this gardener was so angry. And he had a kind of some sharp object, right, which is used in gardening purpose. So he hit the cow with that and killed the cow. He was so mad to protect his work. So he killed the cow and later on he digged up some hole in one corner of that garden and buried the cow there. And later on, and the day passed by and his work was becoming famous. And later on, towards the end of his life, the Yamadutas came to take him. And Yamaduta said, oh, you have done some sinful activity in your life. So you have to come to the Yamaraj's court and he will make his judgment and give you punishment. And he said, what kind of sin I have done? So Yamaduta said, oh, we can look into our records and we know you have killed a cow. You have committed a sin of killing the cow. He said, no, I never committed this sin. So he quoted the philosophy from Bhagavad Gita actually. He said, Prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sarvasha ahankar vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. So the person, actually the material nature, the modes of material nature are the doer. Only the foolish person thinks himself to be the doer. So I am not the doer. I have not committed any sin. It's the material nature which has committed anything. So the Yamadutas, they are bewildered. So they said, oh, maybe Yamaraj himself has to come and he has to deal with this person. Finally, Yamaraj came and Yamaraj is also very intelligent. So he came in disguise. He started praising the work of this gardener. Said, oh, who created this landscape? And the gardener said, I created it. Oh, who created this nice pond here? I created it. Oh, who created all these, planted all these nice flower plants and trees, and who has done this nice trimming of these bushes? Oh, I did it. So who killed this cow? I killed it. So the gardener, in one sense, he accepted while in the mood of claiming that, oh, everything I have done, while he was receiving this glorification. So Yamara said, oh, now you agree that you have done. And then he started again quoting that philosophy. No, I am just the instrument. It's the material nature who is acting. So people, you misuse the philosophy. They use the scripture for their advantage, accepting what is suiting their whims and rejecting that what is restricting. So when it comes to take the credit of their work, people say, oh, yeah, I have done it. I am the doer. I have the cause behind this. And when it comes to get the punishment for their wrongdoing, then say, no, I didn't do this. I am been forced to act like that. This is Krishna who is making me do this. This is material nature who is making do this. But it is ultimately one's desire which is the first cause behind any action. So there are multiple doers. We'll discuss that further as we move forward. And we have briefly discussed earlier also. So there are three doers behind every activity, behind every action. Jeeva, Jagat, Jagadish. So it starts with the desire of the living entity, and Krishna makes arrangement through material nature, provides a facility. And Krishna is the sanctioner for any activity. So there are three causes behind every action. And the primary cause is, how it starts is from the desire. When somebody has a desire to do particular thing, desire to get particular thing. So Krishna is saying, that's why give up the attachment to any sort of thing and be not have the doership mentality, always thinking yourself to be the instrument in Krishna's hand. But we become so attached to all our work, to the result of our work, and before even getting the result, we start concocting, we start daydreaming. That, oh, when I do this, I will get this money, and how will I use that money? I will go to this vacation, or I will buy this thing or that thing. I will enjoy in this way. So we start making these plans, how I will enjoy the fruits of my work. Contrary to what Krishna is saying, that don't be attached to the result of your work. There is another beautiful story I would like to mention to emphasize this point. So once there was a milkmaid, the woman who sells milk. So she had a cow, so she milked the cow and she is carrying all that milk in a pot, keeping the pot on her head. She is going to the market to sell the milk. And on the way, she is fantasizing that, oh, by selling this milk, I will make this much money. And when I make this much money, what will I do in the future? So with this money, I will buy some chickens and these chickens will give some eggs. From those eggs, there will more chickens will come out, and I will sell some of the eggs and more chicken will come out. They will give more eggs. In that way, my business will grow. I will have more and more income. and then I will become rich. I will buy a nice car. I will buy a nice house. Then I will have nice clothes, nice sari and nice jewelry. And I will be wearing that nice sari and nice jewelry. And then one of my friend will come in the front, and I know she is very envious of me. Then I will look at her and I will turn my face away and say, see, now I am very rich. And as she, in her dream, daydreaming, she did that posture, turning her head away with a jerk, the milk pot on her head fell down and all the milk spilled out. So, all the dreams are spoiled. Nobody can get more than what they deserve. And that's why somebody has said, don't count your chickens until they have hatched. So, but we are so much attached to the result of our work, and we keep thinking, how will I increase my profit? How will I increase my wealth? How will I increase my prosperity? So we are always working with attachment, actually. So Krishna is emphasizing, forcing again and again, stressing that one should work without attachment. If then somebody may think, okay, if I should not be working with attachment, I should not be concerned about the work itself. One should be concerned about the work. One should be concerned about the outcome of the work, but should not be result, should not be attached with the result of work. So what I'm saying is, so if somebody thinks, oh, I should not be attached with the result of my work, so I don't care what will happen when I finish this work, if it will be a good work or a bad work. For example, if Matajis are cooking and they start thinking, oh, I am not attached with the result of my work. I don't care if the puris are cooked properly or they are burnt. I don't care if the dal is made properly or if it's burnt. No, it's not that. It's not what Krishna is saying. Don't become attached to the result of your work. Krishna is not saying don't be concerned about the result. We have to still put our best effort to do the best possible work for satisfaction of Krishna. That Krishna has given me this ability, let me do this work with best ability. But don't be attached to enjoy that result, that, oh, this is the result and then I will enjoy this. So then one may think, then how, then why I should act at all if I should not be attached to the result, to enjoy the result? So that's why Krishna is saying, work for the purpose of purification. So in 11th verse, Krishna says, the yogis abandoning attachment act with body, mind, intelligence and even the senses only for the purpose of purification. Sangam tektvatma shuddhaye. So act just for the purpose of purification, offering everything to the Lord. So whatever action we do with our words, with our senses, with our minds, all those should be dedicated to the Lord, and so that it brings purification. Ultimately, actually, we don't have anything to offer to the Supreme Lord. Everything is the property of Lord. Right? So Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Then what is our property? Actually, Yamunacharya, the great sage in Sri Sampradaya, Yamunacharya says, O Lord Vishnu, husband of the goddess of fortune, when I was in ignorance, I thought I will give you many things. But now, when I have gained some intelligence, gained some knowledge, I realize that everything I own is already yours. So what can I offer to you? But we should not mistakenly take this statement in a wrong way, thinking, oh, Yamunacharya is saying there is no need to offer anything to the Lord. It does not mean that I should not offer anything to Krishna. What it means is one should not have the mentality that I am offering something to Krishna. It is already Krishna's. I am just offering it back to Krishna. But sometimes people get this mentality, oh, everything is Krishna's. Sab kuch Bhagwan ka hai, toh Bhagwan ko kya dena? Bhagwan ko kya arpan karna? Sab kuch hi Bhagwan ka hai. So there is no need to put any offering in front of the Lord. Hum Bhagwan ko kya arpan kar sakte hain? But just imagine, if somebody has offered a feast, somebody has sponsored a feast, and he is feeding all these people, and if the other person who are serving, they start thinking, oh, this person has only sponsored, there is no need to feed this person. Is that a very good idea? because this person has sponsored, so there is no need to feed this person only. So we have to offer it to him also, doesn't matter if he is sponsored. So same way, even though Krishna is giving everything, we have to offer it back to Krishna. So one need to have this understanding properly and cultivate that attitude. Tavadiyam vastu govindam tubhyam eva samarpitam. Oh Govinda, I am offering your item back to you. So offering all our actions, whatever we do with our body, mind, words, offering everything to the Supreme Lord. So there is one very famous bhajan, right, the arati which people sing for every occasion, Om Jai Jagadish Hare. So actually that is not a very bona fide arati song. It came from some movie and later became very popular that people made it as a arati song singing on every occasion. But in that also, the one portion from that actually represent this particular philosophy. Tan man dhan sab hai tera, Swami sab kuch hai tera, tera tujhko arpan kya lage mera. So here also it emphasizes the same consciousness, same mentality which one need to develop, that all my body, mind, wealth, everything belongs to you. Nothing is mine and I'm offering it back to you. But if we don't offer any activity, which then it becomes binding. If we don't offer the result of our activity to the Supreme Lord, then it becomes binding in this world. Even the simple activity of eating. Somebody may renounce the whole world, may go to the forest. In the forest also, somebody will be eating something, maybe the fruits, the roots. And if he does not consider those as the property of the Lord and enjoy himself without acknowledging Lord's property, he is also bound. And Krishna says this point very clearly in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 13. Lord Krishna says, Jagya shashtina santo muchyante sarva kalbashe, bujante te tva agham papa, ye pachyante atmakaranat. So, one need to offer everything to the Supreme Lord. If somebody is eating, cooking for himself and eating for his enjoyment, he is eating sin only. So one need to offer everything to the Lord, whatever we cook, whatever we eat, before that putting an offering to the Lord that, oh, everything belongs to you. So please accept this. Even though everything already belongs to Krishna, but when we offer it back to Krishna, it purifies us. It purifies everything. It purifies our consciousness. There is ultimately nothing we can offer in this world to the Lord. Only one thing which we can offer in reality is our heart. But that heart is also filled with such a dirty things, dirty consciousness, dirty desires, that we need to purify our heart to make it eligible to be offered to Krishna. So all our actions should be such that to purify our heart. And there is a beautiful pastime of Lord Ram, which describes that whatever facility Lord has given, whatever engagement Lord has given to us for our purification. So when Lord Ram, along with the army of the monkeys, with all the Sugriva army, he came to the ocean, reached at the shore of the ocean. At that time, Sugriva was a little concerned, will be able to kill Ravan. He is such a powerful king with such a big, huge army, so many weapons, and we are just an army of monkeys, just trees and stones in our hands. Will be able to defeat Ravana. And at that time, Vishana came to take shelter of Lord Ram, and Sugriva and other monkey warriors, they thought, oh, he is the brother of the enemy, so we should bind him and Lord Ram should not give him shelter. But Lord Ram said, whoever comes to take shelter, I cannot deny giving shelter to him. And at that time, Lord Ram said, I can kill Ravana by just lifting one little finger of my left hand. It's not that I need a big army to kill Ravana. Then all the monkey warriors are thinking, then why you have brought all this monkey army here? What is the use of all this monkey army? So Ranjit, if anybody has any concern, they can go back. I don't need anybody to kill Ravana. But all, whatever I have brought here, everybody, it's just to give an opportunity of service for your own purification. So Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, whenever Lord appears in this world, he engages various people, various devotees in his Leela to give them purification. And even within the whole world, for all of us also, whatever engagement we have, that is also we should act in a way thinking that this is for my purification. And the best way to purify ourselves is when we engage in any work and somebody criticizes us, we should consider that also a venue for purification. That's why Kabirji says, Nindak nere rakhiye angan kati chabaye, bin pani sabun bina nirmal kare sabhaye. That if somebody is criticizing us, actually we should keep that person very close to us rather than becoming mad at him when somebody criticizes us, offends us. Rather, we should keep that person very close to us because that person is making our heart softer, cleaning our heart without water, without soap. So when the purification of heart is made our prime motive behind all our actions, then even the bad circumstances, the adversarial circumstances should be welcomed as opportunity sent by Krishna for our further progress. And in that way, one remains in equanimity in both situations, either it's a success or it's failure. In both ways, one can remain equipoised. And in 5.12, Lord Krishna describes further that yukta karam palam tyaktva shantim apnoti nashikim. See, the flow of this whole chapter, as we discussed earlier, the initial set of verses, Krishna is describing how to stay in this world. And then he takes the talk further to describe that one should not consider himself as the doer. There are multiple factors behind every action. So three doers, as I briefly mentioned. And then one should develop the equal vision, seeing everything, everybody with equal vision. Either it's a tiger or a dog or a dog eater or a sage or a stone, one should see everything with equal vision. And then finally, Lord Krishna is describing the peace formula, how to attain the real peace. So ultimately, everybody is looking for peace. Everybody is behind peace. Is there anybody in this world who is not searching for peace and happiness? But people don't have the right definition of peace. What is the meaning of peace, or what is the real meaning of happiness? Mostly people think peace means when there is no disturbance, that is peace. And absence of distress means happiness. Actually, that is not happiness. So if we look at a graph, there is a zero, right, the origin, and there is a negative axis and the positive axis. So negative axis means, let's say that is distress. So absence of distress means one has come to zero, but one has not gone to the positive axis. So one has not gone really towards the peaceful side or the happiness side. So absence of distress really does not mean happiness. Absence of disturbance does not really mean peace. But people, that is what people consider as a peaceful situation. And if there are two countries on war, there is a war going on in two countries, and when the war stops, and the reporters may report the news, now these two countries are at peace. There is no more war going on. So yes, the war is not going on, but the two countries have not really developed a mutual friendship relationship also. But they think, oh, it's so now at peace. So same way in a house, when the husband and wife or the father and son are not fighting with each other, they think, oh, now the house environment is peace. It's peaceful. There is no fighting, no clash going on. But that is not the real peace. So here Krishna is describing how one can attain the real peace, the everlasting peace. Shantim apnoti nashtikim. He attains to the peace. And what kind of peace? which is everlasting, not ending. So how one can attain that peace? Yuktam karam, yukta karam phalam tyaktva. So yukta, yukta means united in consciousness with God. So it can also mean that not wanting any reward other than the purification of heart. So person who are yukta, they give up all the desire for the rewards of their action, and instead they engage in work for the purpose of just their purification. So therefore they very soon attain this higher consciousness, divine consciousness, eternal peace and happiness. But on the other side, contrary to that, Lord Krishna says, ayukta kamakarena phale sakto nibadhyate. So ayukta, so the opposite to yukta is ayukta, one who is not united with God. So when somebody is not united with the Supreme Lord, it can mean that one is desiring the result of his action. He is living for his own sense gratification, not for the benefit of the soul. Such person, they are always incited by the craving, the lustful desires, the enjoyment mentality. So they are bound with the reaction of their work. So when the work is performed in that consciousness, it is always binding. And these ayukta people, they are bound with the samsara of the cycle of birth and death. So that's why this cycle keeps going on. When we are not in that consciousness that everything belongs to the Lord, we are not the real doer, we are not the proprietor, we are not the enjoyer. So if we don't have that consciousness, it is always binding and it keeps going on and on and on. To understand that point, there is a very beautiful story. It's called story of Sansara Darshan. So once one businessman, he was going in his ship with the load of his goods to sell those goods. And on the way, his ship got stuck. There was a big, heavy winds blowing. They started throwing the ship here and there. And this person finally became unconscious on the ship. And the ship landed somewhere. It came on the shore of some island. And as this person came to consciousness, he completely forgot who he is, where he is, where he has come now. So he has completely lost everything, completely forgot everything. And he just came down from the ship and started walking on this island, going inside deep in the island. And as he is walking in the front, as he's walking behind, he heard the voices of some wild animals. So he saw a wild animal coming to him, chasing him. He started running. So he started running faster, even in more towards inside of the island. And as he is walking inside, he saw one witch which is standing in the front, very ugly looking, and he took a 90 degree turn and started running in another direction. As he started running there, he saw one, so he came across one, came in front of one tree, and he jumped onto that tree, holding on to the branch of the tree. And under that branch, there is a big pit. And inside the pit, he saw one snake sitting, cobra sitting, looking at him, watching, waiting for him to fall down so he can eat him. So he's hanging from this tree. And the branch which he's holding, on that branch, he saw two mouse, one black mouse, one white mouse, sitting on that tree and cutting, chewing on that branch of the tree, trying to break that branch. So as he is hanging there, as he looks down, there is death. And as he holding onto the branch, he's thinking, how will I survive now? And at that time, on the one elephant, the wild animal which was chasing, one elephant came there and he started shaking the tree badly. And as he's shaking the tree, on the treetop, there was one nest of bees, madhumakhi ka chhatta, and all these bees, they came out of the nest and they started biting this person. So he is in such a miserable condition. The bees are stinging him. Elephant is shaking the tree. Under the tree, if he leaves that branch, he will fall into the pit and the snake is waiting for him. But in all that miserable condition, as he is looking up to seek some help, one drop of honey came and fell onto the mouth. So he is tasting that drop of honey and thinking, oh, this honey is so sweet. Maybe I can taste one more drop of this honey. So even amidst all these miserable situations, he is trying to seek little pleasure because of this honey drop. So this situation represents all of us. In this material world, there are always problems and problems. We are going through the cycle of birth, death, old age, disease. And throughout the life, there are so many problems coming. And in between, there is little happiness. And we relish that happiness. When we get that little pleasure, little happiness, little satisfaction in something, we think, oh, life is so beautiful, life is so good. Even though there are some problems, that is part of life. Let it continue like that. So what are all these various things represent in this particular scenario? So the wild animal chasing, those are all the miserable problems in life. And this witch which is standing in front, that is the old age. We are running from youth to fighting with all these problems. The old age, which is another miserable situation, is waiting for us. And the snake which is sitting under the in the pit, under the tree, that represents death. So death is waiting. Death can come at any time. And the two mice which are sitting on the branch of that tree, biting the branch, represents day and night. The time is passing by. Every moment time is passing by. And this drop of nectar falling in the mouth is a small, some flickering happiness which we attain in this world. But we get so caught up in this flickering happiness, we think, oh, let me try to enjoy a little bit. Let me try to enjoy a little more. All these problems will say, that's okay. But let me enjoy. Let me enjoy. So we get caught up in this enjoying mentality, trying to enjoy the result of our work, and it leads to binding in this world. So Krishna is stressing that one should give up this consciousness of enjoyment mentality. Rather, one should develop detachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord. In that way, one can become free from any sinful reaction. So one should act just for the purpose of purification. So I will stop here. If anybody has any question and comment based on what we discussed.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhanvar Pranam, or Guru Sisrila Prabhupada Guru Maharaj. I have actually two questions. One was towards your end of the lecture when you mentioned that we know we all are undergoing so many problems in life and everything, but if we kind of see some moments of happiness, then we cherish it and then we feel that everything is going so good. But isn't it that one of the lessons that we should learn actually, because then there are so many problems in life, we need to actually cherish those good things that happen, but otherwise we will get so overwhelmed with it. So that, I think, should be the attitude. If that is not the attitude, then actually we will be drowned in distress. Also, we can't keep on considering that this is Dukhalayam, and I know it is Dukhalayam Ashashvatam, but attitude at the same time should be to also cherish those moments and then also realize that we have to move on towards self-realization. Am I correct in that or not correct?
Here the point which we were mentioning here was not to develop the attitude of enjoyment, but we are not mentioning that one should not cherish the moments or one should kind of get into that sulking mood that, oh, there are so many problems. One should consider all the situations, either it's happiness or distress, as the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. That everything has been given by the Supreme Lord. Whatever circumstances I have is created by the Lord for my own betterment, for my own purification. So in that way, then we can move on. But otherwise, if we are only looking towards the happy moments, then every time there is a problem, we will be frustrated and blaming the Lord, oh, why there is problem? Why me? Why Lord is giving me problems? So we have to see hand of Lord in everything, in every situation, happiness and distress. Otherwise, in happiness situation, people think it's because of me. And when it is distress, they think, oh, why Krishna is giving me this problem? Why me? So in both situations, we have to have equanimity.
Yeah, I get your point. I mean, you are saying that basically, yes, kind of bring Krishna into the equation. Whatever is happening is because of
right.
Krishna, and then like abide by that. So then we will never be actually distressed, even when we are disappointed, kind of thing.
Right. So we have to have Krishna in the picture, not keeping Krishna out of the picture. That when it is enjoying, then I forget Krishna, and when it is suffering, then I remember Krishna.
Yeah, got it.
So they say, right? Dukh mein simran sab kare, sukh mein kare na koi. Sukh mein jo simran kare, dukh ka hai ko hoi.
Yeah.
Because people don't remember Krishna when they are enjoying. They think, oh, everything is because of me. Let me enjoy. But when there is problem, then they will come to God.
Yeah, Prabhuji. And towards the beginning of the lecture, I know for some reason I was not able to listen to it clearly. And so please forgive me if you need to repeat it. If you cannot, that's also fine. I'll go through the lecture. That was about the lotus feet, when you're talking about the importance of lotus, like how we need to be working to stay unattached, just like a lotus when it's even in the most simple, the muddy kind of conditions, but it's so beautiful and so remains above all those conditions. So we are working also, we should just remain attached. My question was, actually this was one of the questions that was asked to me on Sunday from one of the tour persons. And like when we say lotus feet of Krishna, right? Why do we say actually lotus feet? I'm like, I just always took it as a default that is lotus feet, but why lotus feet? Is there a significance to that lotus feet of Krishna?
So that's what I was describing in the beginning, that lotus is a very beautiful object in this world. So when we want to describe anything beautiful, it's compared with the lotus leaf. So Krishna's feet are described as lotus feet. Krishna's eyes are described as lotus-like eyes. Krishna's hands are described as lotus-like hands. So in this world, lotus is one of the most beautiful objects which can be described. So that's why everything is mentioned as the words I was using right in the beginning. Krishna's hands are described as kar kamal, that lotus-like hand. So there is no other reason but just to signify that it's so beautiful, it's just compared with lotus, because lotus is very beautiful. Because we don't have the understanding of spiritual beauty. See, within this world also, we tell the devotees, I pay obeisances at your lotus feet. It's a gesture of our glorification. So considering him as beautiful as a lotus, or who is free from any bondage in this world.
Okay. So actually, I just an afterthought to this question. Like, see, beautiful, when we say Prabhuji, beautiful is very like a personal word. You know, what may appear beautiful to me may not appear beautiful to you. Well, somebody mm-hmm. might like lotus, somebody might like rose. You know, somebody might consider rose more beautiful than lotus. But mm-hmm. That is my one perspective. Second thing is lotus, why we are using for Krishna, is it because of the fact that it's so beautiful despite the fact that it has been, the way it is, the conditions in which it is growing? So like rose is obviously in a bush, like that is in the muddy conditions, but still what comes out is so pure as lotus. So is that way we are able to understand the beauty of lotus, and that's why I mean, I'm just trying to understand. So that's why we are using lotus eyes, lotus feet, rather than probably rose eyes, rose feet. I mean, just kind of.
Right. So, see, the lotus, as you mentioned, right, you described that. So the lotus comes out of dirt from the bottom of the lake, and it's untouched by that dirty situation and rises upward towards the sunshine. So it maintains its beauty even though being in a muddy water. But on this other side, rose, even though it's beautiful, but along with rose comes thorns also. So why lotus is compared, or anything is compared with lotus, or especially why Krishna is compared as lotus leaf, everything of Krishna's limbs as compared as lotus-like? Because Krishna, even though he comes in this world, but he is completely not of the world. He is completely free. He does not fall down from his position, achutya. He is unfallible. So even though Krishna is doing all these various things, which from normal person's perspective may seem to be wrong activity or a sinful activity, or he is stealing butter, or he is favoring somebody, or he is getting somebody killed, he is killing Shishupal and all that. So, but even being engaged in all those activities from external viewpoint, Krishna is infallible. He does not become bound in anything. As the lotus being born from the muddy water does not get bettered by the water, the same way Krishna remains completely detached, even though being in this world, in front of people when he takes appearance. So that's why another factor of why Krishna is compared with lotus.
Yeah, very nice, Prabhuji. I think that's a perfect explanation. I think if somebody anytime asks me about lotus feet, now I know what to say. Thank you. It was wonderful explanation. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mathu. So anybody else has any question or comment? Okay, then we'll end the call here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anand Pati Vaishnavinda ki jai.
Shri Krishna ki jai.